Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters. Be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. Now, here's your host, CJ.
Hi, I'm CJ Liu,
and you're listening to Fire It Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Talk radio to spark your curiosity, illuminate your spirit, and fire you up into action right here, right now, and every Thursday on 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Today on Fire It Up with CJ, I have Professor Turul Keskin, who's assistant professor at the International and Middle Eastern Studies Center for Turkish Studies at Portland State University. Welcome.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Keskin, hey, I wanted to kind of briefly tell a little bit about why I decided to have this show. Not only is it really topical, but about a year ago, my family and I traveled to the Middle East. So we went to Egypt, Israel, and Jordan. And during that time, we were really blessed to have wonderful people that we met along the way. And we talked to Christians, we talked to Muslims, we talked to Jews, we talked to people in Jordan, Israel, Egypt, all about the Middle East, because as an American, it's a very, very confusing topic and one that's hard for me to understand and relate to. And the interesting thing from all those conversations is that I found a lot of the arguments and points and perspectives completely valid but incomplete. And during my conversations with the folk, I was talking to a Zionist in Israel, and I would convey what the Muslims in Egypt or the Muslim general, who he was an army general from Jordan, had conveyed to me. And the one thing that I noticed was that there is a resistance to listen to the other perspective, and there is more of a focus of being right than being heard and understood. So this show, what I really want to accomplish and focus today is to really try to understand and hear your perspective and what's happening, because I could tell you as an American, I go into a state of denial. I read through all this stuff. I force myself to read all this stuff, but normally I get overwhelmed and just confused. So that's the framework that I think most of our listeners are in. Yes. I think, or anything like me. So really, it's for me to understand and listen, and that's my primary goal today. So thank you for coming here.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, so tell me a little bit about your experience in America. You came here from Turkey in the 1990s to live in the United States, to go to all places, Virginia Tech. How did you end up landing at Virginia Tech?
Actually, by coincidence, you know, I was gonna go to Germany. You know, I am originally from Turkey, as you said. I grew up in Turkey. I finished schools in Turkey. I finished my undergrad and master's in Turkey. Then I was gonna go to Germany because some part of my family lives in Germany. Like most of the immigrants in Germany are from Turkey, actually.
Oh,
almost 2.8 million Turks legally, and 4.1 illegally altogether. They are living in Germany, actually. So I was going to go to Germany to study my PhD, but one of my professors who graduated from Georgetown University, who convinced me to come to the United States. That's why I came to the United States, for my educational purposes, basically, doing my PhD. Then I ended up in Virginia Tech, actually.
Wow, and so this was a change because you were originally going to go to Germany, and then you came to the United States.
United States.
What did you imagine America would be like?
I mean, living in the Middle East, living different than the, you know, Western oriented or more more living in a traditional society is slightly different. But Turkey is also different than the other Muslim societies.
Yes.
Say. Because it's Turkey is more we can see Islam, but at the same time we can see the modernity, secularism. The combination basically. Turkey is a truly diverse society basically. One of the diverse society and one of the most democratic society and state in the Middle East because of economic circumstances, cultural circumstances, what I believe. But there wasn't much where I grew up actually in Istanbul. There wasn't much difference between United States and Istanbul as a big city.
Okay, so then tell me how you arrived and what your first impressions were when you arrived in the States.
I arrived in the United States, I will not forget actually, it was interesting, I arrived at JFK, August 26, 1996, and my friends were supposed to pick me up from the airport, JFK, but they didn't come actually.
Oh no.
They didn't come JFK, I was going to stay 1 month in New York, and I was going to come to D.C. because I got accepted, George Mason University. I was coming to George Mason University. So I stay in New York 1 month, then I moved, it was interesting experience, first month was confused, living by yourself. This was an interesting experience.
Yeah, and especially, of all places, I mean, New York City is like almost epitome of everything Western, right? It's crazy. Yeah. People are curt. They're very abrupt and they're very direct. And was that like it? Was that what it was like in Turkey? Or, I mean, I know in Turkey people are very direct too. And that there's a lot of hustle and bustle, but what was it?
In New York and Istanbul, we can compare these two cities because of Istanbul is also 15 million almost. 15 million people. I mean, especially the last 30 years, there was a huge domestic migration in Turkey, especially, the rural areas, traditional areas, small cities because of the industrialization, because of the economic development in Turkey. So many people moved to big cities in Turkey. And in early 1980s or late 1970s, Istanbul's population was 2 to 3 million, like Egypt, Cairo.
Wow.
Same things, basically. But today, Egypt, Cairo in Egypt, and Istanbul, Turkey, is almost 14-15 million people living.
Wow.
So it's not, in a way, Istanbul is not different than, maybe culturally slightly different, but economically is not different than New York, basically. Everything is busy, everyone is busy, everything is expensive, basically. And culturally, slightly different, but economically similar way.
Yeah, what were the slight differences that you picked up? You mentioned it's a traditional society. What does it mean to be traditional for you, and what were the cultural differences you picked up?
Cultural differences and living in a more traditional society, but Turkey is becoming more modernized as well, as Muslim society is being modernized as well today. I would say... religion in the United States, especially in New York, plays a less role, especially in New York. Especially in the West, especially in the big cities, religion plays a less role. In Turkey, in Istanbul, religion still plays an important role in Muslim societies.
In
a traditional society, most important, the religion plays more important role than modern, let's say, more modern societies, big cities, more industrialized societies, basically. I shouldn't say the more modern, but more industrialized societies, more economic-oriented societies, because in the city, market is important, economy is important, job is important, work is important, it's becoming important. I'm not saying this is bad or good, but In Muslim societies in the cities or traditional societies or developing nations, not just in the Middle East, but other countries like, in African countries or Latin American countries, religion still plays an important role. Traditional culture, traditional values play important role easy place.
Okay, and that's perfect. That's a perfect segue for what I want to talk to you about in the next segment, because I really want to understand what are those religious values and the traditional role, so that we can understand kind of the perspective, because I think a lot of what shapes a culture, the values and the beliefs and the attitude. So I'd love to hear that. So Dr. Tuvrul Keskin, Assistant Professor of International at Middle Eastern Studies at the Center at the Portland State University, on Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio. Up next, what we need to know about the Middle East. You want to know more about Tuvrul or listen to other shows like this? Check it out at www.firedupwithcj.com. We'll be right back.
Feeling bogged down by your daily grind? Not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heartwarmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
So this may sound simple, but when you're planning a road trip, you have to figure out where you're going first. With the Take Shape for Life program, the destination is living life at optimal health. So what does that mean? It means more energy. It means less medications. And yes, it means losing the extra pounds, which is actually part of the getting there. Talk to a Take Shape for Life health coach who's been there. Listen to their story and their journey. Call 877-520-SIMPLE. That's 877-520-SIMPLE. Results will vary. Talk to your doctor before starting program. Call for details.
There's a small town dealer that'll treat you right.
You'll save plenty at Valenti Toyota.
Hi, this is Rob Valenti from the Valenti family of dealerships, Dunn's Corners, Wesley, Rhode Island, home of Toyota and Subaru. And here we go, number one for a reason. 2011 Toyota Camry for only $159 a month. 2010 Toyota Corolla for only $149 a month. They're coming from Rhode Island, Connecticut, Massachusetts to your number one Toyota destination. Now, how about a Subaru? A 2010 Subaru Forester, only $21,638. Save $2,600. A 2011 Subaru Outback for only $21,995. Save $2,200. They're coming from Rhode Island, Connecticut, Mass. To your number one Subaru destination. Over 1,000 cars and trucks in stock. 1 hour delivery. Everybody drives away. Service open Monday through Saturday till 4 p.m. Free oil changes for life program. Visit us now 24/7 at BobValenti.com. Call now 877-811-7200. Remember, folks, if I can't beat the competitor's price by $500, I'll give you $1,000. Cash back, so just smile.
You'll save plenty at Valenti Subaru.
Hey there, in case you just joined in, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Dr. Tuvrul Keskin, Assistant Professor for Turkish Studies at Portland State University. This segment, what we need to know about the Middle East. And before we went on break, we're talking about the contrast that Dr. Keskin felt when he came to the United States. And one of the things that you mentioned was that when you went in America, there's religion and traditional values play less of a role. And I was sharing to you, when we went to Turkey, there would be I think around 5 in the morning, mm-hmm. and then at 12, 4, 7, 9, that's what I kind of recall around those times, mm-hmm. There was a call for prayer. And you were mentioning with the five pillars of, tell us a little bit about the five pillars and the purpose of those prayers.
Yeah, praying is Muslims are supposed to pray five times a day. It's a morning one, actually. You are talking about 5 or 6 a.m. in the morning. Depends on the time, depends on the region, depends on the country. We have five times praying. One is in the morning, noon, late afternoon, and evening, and after evening, basically, five times. But it's five times. I think depends on the time also. There's a shortest one in the morning, basically.
Yeah, and then here's what I recall that, well, I remember projecting underneath my hotel bedroom at 5 a.m. in our case.
I hope it wasn't close to Moscow, actually. So.
Yeah, it was just this kind of really loud broadcast. It's like a citywide broadcast of this prayer. And tell me, do you remember what it said? I don't know if you recall. I'm sure you probably have it ingrained in your brain.
Yeah, basically they are inviting the Muslims to pray in the morning. Basically, they are inviting the Muslims to pray, and they are calling God is the one, Muhammad is the messenger, and come and pray. Basically, it's short announcement. Basically.
Yeah, and I remember that public announcement at 5. Yeah. The gentleman who we met in Turkey when we asked him, as he said, that it says, come in the morning at 5 a.m., you'll feel better after you pray.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was
but
true.
But imagine, this in a more industrialized society, people are working, getting up 8 a.m. in the morning, going to work, working 9 hours, 10 hours a day. I mean, you are going to pray less.
Right.
You are going to pray less, and you are going to work more. Because in modern life is defined by the economy, defined by the job, defined by the, market conditions. Mm-hmm. And market and economy is the most important things in the person's life, whether you are a Muslim, Christian, or Jewish. You are going to pray less, actually.
Yeah.
Even
though do you think
religion is required, but you are going to pray less, but you are going to work more.
Yeah. And how does that register in the religion? Because, it's a call for prayer. It's one of the five pillars of things that you should do. I mean, is this one of the big beefs that Muslims have, really traditional conservative people have with kind of the American way, which is all about work, right?
Yeah, all about work. We have Muslim society, whether in Turkey or Egypt or Indonesia or Pakistan or Tunisia or in Mali, in Africa, we have very diverse societies. We have a very diverse population, ethnically, value-wise. Some of them are conservative, very small number of Muslims are conservative, actually. Most of the Muslims, they are looking to find a better lifestyle, better economic standard, better job, education for their children. This is a trend in Muslim societies, whether you live in Egypt or Indonesia or Pakistan. And also most of the Muslim societies, especially, in Southeast Asia, almost 80% of the Muslims living outside of the Middle East, actually, especially Indonesia, Pakistan, Malaysia, India, almost 155 million Muslims living in India. And poverty among the Muslim, discrimination among the Muslim, basically, against the Muslims in India is incredible. And this creating unintended consequences for the Muslim society and pushing the Muslim towards radicalization, especially, this poverty, unemployment, education.
Okay, so it's really
the diverse societies, basically, like in the West. Today in the United States, we see Christian fundamentalism, or moderate Christians or seculars. We have very diverse society in the United States. Same as in Muslim societies.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting is I'm hearing a couple of different things. One is that not all the Muslims are in the Middle East, I know I've read that before we went on our trip, and I forget it because for some reason I have a distorted filter where I think all Muslims are in the Middle East. Is that just me, or does everyone have that distorted filter?
No, general media misconception, actually. So, the 75-80% of the Muslims living outside of the Middle East. So the Muslim, almost 20-30 million Muslims living in China.
Wow,
15-20 million of them living west part of the China, Uyghur, Xinjiang region. I mean, almost 50-60 million, maybe more than that, living in Central Asia.
Mm-hmm.
220 million Muslims living in Indonesia. I mean, almost more than 100 million Muslims living in Bangladesh, and 170 million Muslims living in Pakistan. This is the population.
Do you think that the media is purposely distorting it, or are they just ignorant? I mean, they can look up on the internet know these numbers. Why is there this distortion, do you think?
I mean, I think internet is good. Internet is good for everyone, especially we can see this current transformation or revolution, we can call, in the Middle East, especially in Tunisia, in Egypt and in 2009 in Iran. I think media is playing, especially internet media, especially Facebook, Twitter, is playing an important role. But unfortunately, this technological innovation helping the Muslims and Muslim societies and Muslim societies moving toward more democratization. But
yeah,
in the United States, we see some media, especially mainstream media, filtering the news. And American audience, they are not receiving this news. They are not receiving this diverse population, different views in the Muslim societies, not just about, you know, the Islamic fundamentalism or Islamic terrorism, but we have a different perspectives in Muslim
society. So what is the media not picking up? What is its filter, and what messages is it not hearing to create this diversity?
Yeah, for example, in I can give the example from Turkey. Turkey is one of the 15 developing countries in the world, one of the most developing countries, future economy, and media doesn't mention about this. Yeah. Or media doesn't mention about, you know, economic boom in Qatar or United Arab Emirates. Or gender struggle in Egypt, gender struggle in Tunisia, gender struggle in Morocco, basically. Changes in Morocco, changes, social and political transformation in these societies. We always receive the news in a negative way, basically. There are a lot of good things happening in the Middle East, actually, and in Muslim societies. Economic development is happening. And educational, more women participation in the education.
Mm-hmm.
In the Muslim
society.
Tell
me a little bit about
this
that.
Very good, actually. More than half of the, you know, students in Turkey are women.
Wow, that's
great. This is the more important development than the terrorism, I believe.
Right.
Because it will affect us in long term. And more women, more women
in
the education means more women will participate in the workforce. And this will change the society in the long run.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this is a general flaw of the media generally, whether it's in the United States. I mean, it does filter for negative, mm-hmm. scary things. It's about generating fear, because that's what people watch. They want to watch for some odd reason. Now, you made another comment about the internet. And you said that is the media where it's really changing. And we know from, you know, the Facebook page that the Egyptian guy from Google put together, that generated a lot that pretty much fueled the Egyptian change. Now, or did it? I mean, do you view that as one of the key things, or is it just the internet in general?
I think, you know, there's, if you look at the 1979 Iran, you know, the Khomeini came to power in Iran in 1979, if you remember.
Mm-hmm.
Before 1979, Shah was installed, basically, by the United States in 1953 or 1954 by the United States. A democratically elected president of the Mossadegh was overthrown by the United States with the CIA coup. What happened between 1953, I'm comparing this to two different time periods, today and Iran. In 1953 to 1979, Shah was a dictator. Mm-hmm. Shah was an anti-democratic leader in Iran. Mm-hmm. What happened, they didn't let the people to form their own oppositions. Mm-hmm. Mosque was the only place in Iran between 1953, 1954 till 1979, mosque or temples. It was the only places that people can get together, form opposition groups. That's why, as a result of this, we see, because the mosque was the free space for the politics that, you know, the Islamists was using and exploiting this space. That's why Khomeini came to power. But the same thing's happening today in the Middle East. But people are not using the mosque. People are using the, you know, virtual websites like Facebook, Twitter. They are trying to get together on the Facebook page. They are trying to create a Twitter account. They are emailing to each other and a website, basically. This is helping create a collective identity for the opposition groups in the Middle East. And we will see more and more. If you look at the Iran in 2009 election against Ahmadinejad, Mousavi, basically, supporters, was organized in the Facebook and Twitter as well, like in Egypt, like in Tunisia. It's not different.
So do you think that
there should be changes in media?
I believe the
gathering places.
Yeah, no, I think I actually have a new slogan for their marketing campaigns in Middle East. They should say the virtual mosque.
Yeah, virtual mosque, basically. Facebook. This is a Facebookification of our life.
Yeah.
Including in the United States. Everyone has a Facebook account. My mom has a Facebook account. I mean, this is in the Middle East, basically. This new technological change is shaping our daily life, whether you live in the United States or in Turkey or Pakistan.
Yeah, oh gosh. Okay, so when we get back from the break, what I want to talk to you about is, your reactions to Egypt and Tunisia. So we have Dr. Tuğrul Keskin, Assistant Professor of International and Middle Eastern Studies for Turkish Studies at the Portland State University and Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio. Up next, more about what we need to know about the Middle East. We'll be right back.
Bogged down by your daily grind, not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heart warmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Ladies, are you living an inspired life? Do you yearn for a more passionate, dream-filled life? Here's Linda Joy, founder of Aspire Magazine, and she has a gift for you.
Aspire has launched its Mission to Inspire initiative with a commitment to give away 100,000 one-year digital subscriptions to women around the globe. Every subscription comes with a multitude of free gifts from our team inspiration partners.
To claim it all, go to AspireMag.net today. No purchase necessary. And live an inspired life.
Now is the perfect time to learn Tai Chi and Qigong. These ancient Chinese healing arts, also called mind-body practice, are simple to learn, clinically proven to be effective, and can be practiced by anyone, anywhere, at any time. For 10 years, the Institute of Integral Qigong and Tai Chi has been a respected leader in mind-body practice training. Visit IIQTC.org. Empower yourself, empower others. Visit IIQTC.org for more information on mind body practice. IIQTC.org.
Are you feeling stuck? Do you want to be free from fears and doubts and finally feel good about yourself, but you just don't know how to get there? Dr. Schaub's Accelerated Breakthrough Program provides you with the tools and solutions to go beyond your limitations and achieve self-empowered confidence. Call for your free phone consultation at 866-903-MIND. Visit CellularWisdom.com. That's CellularWisdom.com.
Get up to $5,000 guaranteed for your trade and $1,000 in free gas. Central is pulling out the big guns for this one. Central Auto Group in Plainfield. Home of Ford, Mazda, and Hyundai. Central has hundreds of cars that get over 40 miles per gallon. Gas prices are predicted to hit $5 a gallon by summer. Trade in that gas guzzler now. At Central, where you get up to $5,000 and $1,000 in free gas. At Central Hyundai, get over 40 miles per gallon with a 2011 Sonata for $179 a month. At Central Mazda, drive the Mazda 3 for $189 a month. At Central Ford, get over 40 miles per gallon with the Ford Focus. Drive it for $149 a month. America's best warranty. 10-year, 100,000 miles. Hundreds of pre-owned cars starting at under $5,000. Test drive. CentralAutoGroupCT.com. Central, exit 87 off I-395 in Plainfield. Open 7 days. Call 860-564-4014.
Central Auto Group.
Hi, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This segment on Fired Up with CJ, Dr. Keskin, author of The Sociology of Islam, Secularism, Economy, and Politics, a book that just came out this month. So, Dr. Keskin, tell me about, we were just talking about Facebook, and you had said that one of the things that it's doing is, unlike with the mosque where people used to go to create to collectively gather, people are going on Facebook. And you made an interesting comment about in religious, there was only in the mosque, there's only one voice. And tell me about what you think is happening now with the internet.
With this new technological changes, we have more voices, basically. More voices means, from my understanding, more individualization, more individual understanding of Islam. We have many different perceptions of Islam. There is, according to, you know, the Islam, there is only one Islam. But everyone's relation with Islam is slightly changing. Their perception is changing. The relationship between Islam and Muslim is changing, basically. Because everyone has a different experience. Everyone has a different social, political, and economic experience. And we can see in the basic of Facebook, most of the Muslim, most of the my friends, actually, either in Turkey or here or Egypt or other places, everyone has a Facebook account. Everyone has a Twitter account. Everyone has an email. I think this is very important. This changes, this technological changes, technological innovations, especially last 10 years, 13 years we have been facing, and we have been living, basically, and experiencing, is going to change the Middle East. It's going to change the Muslim societies. It's going to push the Muslim societies towards more individualization, more secularization, and people left the mosque. And they are marching toward the market. They are marching toward the virtual mosque. Virtual mosque is the basically this internet environment, virtual environment, from my understanding.
Yeah, so give me an example of your examples of, you said it's changing, and it's changing based on each person's different social, economic, political situation. Give me an example of what you mean.
Yeah, basically what's happening in especially recent case of the Egypt, this you know, this Google guy came and created the homepage and started some kind of revolutions. Then everyone start the homepage after that. Everyone start the Facebook page. Everyone start the Twitter page. And you see the individual journalism in Egyptian case, basically. Everyone was sending the pictures, stories, including a friend of mine, colleague of mine, who was there when this Egyptian revolution was taking place in Tahrir Square, Mohammed Bamiye from the University of Pittsburgh. He sent me two pieces by email, and we published on the sociologyofislam.org homepage. So I think it's very important. But he told me the same things. Now, so many people, especially age between 18, maybe, lower 16 to 30s, everyone has a Facebook account.
What else did he tell you when he was there? What did he tell you about his experience on the square?
What's that?
I'm sorry. What did he tell you about his experience on the square when he was there?
He told me that, in the beginning, everything was in chaos. Everything was in chaos because Egypt is slightly different than the other Arab nation because of bi-population. Egypt always has been seen as a center, headquarter, hub of the Arab culture because of the Egypt created a lot of cultural and literature critics, writers, novelists, basically, politicians. So Egypt was important, but culturally important. But also Egypt politically is important because of the military. Military has been in charge in Egypt since the 1950s. First Egyptian president, Jamal Abdel Nasser, was a military man. Mubarak, since he came to power in 1981, he was the military man. And between Enver Sadat, he controlled the military. Politically and militaristically, Egypt was the center of the Arab culture. But this is changing now. My friend was telling me, actually, Mohammed Bamiye, he was. People were pessimistic at the beginning because of the Egyptian strong military, strong political structure, strong judicial system, and strong, powerful state. But I believe this is changing in Egypt. as a result of this new technological changes, as a result of this new democratization, as a result of the globalization, because everyone can see what was happening in the in Egypt.
Right.
So people, that was important. So, but these changes or these events became well known by the people of Egypt.
Yeah. It's I think the whole thing is fascinating.
Yeah.
I want to move on to a slightly different topic because I think you have a really unique perspective to share, because it seems like a lot of people are looking at Turkey as a potential model because, you know, in its geographic position where it's kind of east and west, you know, and it's part of the EU now, it's transitioned quite well, and it's also predominantly Muslim as well. So people are looking at that as example of what may be possible for the governance of Egypt and Tunisia. So tell us a little bit about the Turkish experience and how it's similar or dissimilar.
Turkish experience, Turkey was established issues of the Ottoman Empire. Ottoman Empire was a multi-ethnic state, multi-ethnic religion basically established in 1923 by the Atatürk, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, who's the founder of the Turkey. Atatürk was educated in the Ottoman schools, basically, military school or political school or religious schools. And he tried to create, he tried to modernize the country, but not removing the religion. I disagree somehow with the other people. He tried to modernize the religion as well, not just the society. And first 27 years, from 1923 to 1946, there was a one-party system. Then after that, we entered the multi-party system in Turkey in 1946 till today, basically. I think it's a very important. But Turkey, Atatürk, one of the most important things what Atatürk did, founder of the Turkey, he tried to modernize Turkey by using the industrialization, by using the education. And most of the, Western classics were translated into Turkish in the 1930s and 1940s by the education minister of Turkey. And Atatürk tried to use secularism, tried to separate the religion from the politics. But at the same time, he established the Turkish religious affairs. One of the first Quran translation into the Turkish was published by the Atatürk, published by the Turkish religious affairs. He was not trying to, remove the religion from the public life, but state was trying to control the religion. That's why the religious affairs was established.
So you said, in what way was it kind of control religion? And you said also it was trying to control and modernize religion. So that was made me curious. What did you mean by that?
Because in the Ottoman era, religion, especially the last 100 years, religious institutions, some of the religious institutions, not Islam, I'm not talking about the religion, but the religious institution became corrupt in Ottoman era.
Right.
So Atatürk tried to modernize these institutions. He didn't try to minimize the role of the religion, but controlling the religion and modernize the religious institutions. So that's why he closed these religious institutions and he tried to establish new institutions. And Atatürk's view is based on the basically Ziya Gökalp, who was the sociologist in Turkey in 1910-1920s, basically. He has a very interesting argument, Turkification, Islamization, and Westernization. We are Muslim, we are ethnically Turk, but at the same time we have to adopt Western education, Western technology, Western industrialization, basically. This was the, the Atatürk's views and Atatürk perspective is based on. But time has changed today. Today, Justice and Development Party is in the power. They came to power, pro-religious, pro-Islamic party, who came to power in 2002. I think they are doing a good job in Turkey.
Yeah. I do. Well, it's been used as, it's been held
Islam,
up as a model.
Traditional values together, basically.
Okay, so I want to talk a little bit more about that when we get back from the break. Mm-hmm. I want to find out a little bit more about what's happening in Turkey today, which you referenced before about in your book, where you talk a lot about these things. So author Professor Tuğrul Keskin on Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. Up next, more on Dr. Keskin's book. You can want to know more about Tuğrul or listen to other shows like this. Check it out on www.firedupwithcj.com. We'll be right back.
Bogged down by your daily grind, not living up to your greatest potential? Then it's time to turn up the heat and get real with what truly matters, be it family, career, wellness, spirituality, or anything else that fuels your inner flame. Join Fire It Up with CJ as this respected life coach talks to a wide range of experts and everyday people for their inspiring and unconventional ideas to help you make the most from your life. Equal parts heart warmer, cheerleader, and butt kicker, CJ Liu draws on her extensive experience in business and life coaching, along with her intuition and playful humor, to address meaningful topics with truth and irreverence. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.
Are you ready to tap into the healer within? Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Did you know the real doctor is the source that lives within you, that heals within you minute by minute every day? The healer within is the innate intelligence of the human body. When we cut our hand with a piece of glass, we don't have to command the body to close the wound and grow new skin. It knows how to heal itself. We do have to nourish the skin by disinfecting it and remove the glass, or it cannot heal. The innate healer relies upon us to assist in this healing process. Our role is to identify its needs, provide the substances required for the healing, and remove the obstacle. CRA, Contact Reflex Analysis, is an energy assessment which translates human energy into information. This information provides me with the ability to identify your needs as a healer and to design a specific solution for you. Contact us to achieve optimal health at 888-777-4232. That's 888-777-4232, and visit us at MaryJaneMack.com.
Hi, this is Rob Valenti of the Bob Valenti All Mall, Mystic, Connecticut, home of Chevy, Ford, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, and Volkswagen. And here we go, a 2011 Chevy Avail from $99.99. Save $2,600. A 2011 Chevy Cruze for only $99 a month. Ford F-Series trucks, save up to $10,000. 2011 Ford Focus from $12,799. Save over $5,600. 2011 Ram trucks from $18,997. Save over $3,000 and 0% financing. 2011 Jeep Wrangler Spring Special, only $21,977. Over 1,000 cars and trucks in stock. 1 hour delivery. Everybody drives away. Service open Monday through Saturday till 4 p.m. Free oil change and filter program. Visit us now 24/7 at BobValenti.com. Call now 800-699-2571. Remember, folks, if I can't beat the competition's price by $500, I'll give you $1,000 cash back. So just smile.
Find it all. Bob Valenti's
Auto Mall. Hi, I'm CJ Liu, and you're listening to Fired Up with CJ on the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This segment on Fire Up with CJ, Dr. Keskin, author of The Sociology of Islam, Secularism, Economy and Politics. And during the break, Dr. Keskin had said to me, you know, part of what the goal of, for him on the show is to get people to be optimistic. There's a lot of really positive things that are happening in the Middle East, even despite the filter that Western publications put on what's happening in the Middle East. Sure, there are, you know, there's so many tragedies that had so many tragic deaths, but there's also a lot of positive things, which is the focus of this segment. So tell us about, Dr. Keskin, tell us about how the economy is the engine of change that's transforming Europe and the Middle East.
Yeah. If you look at the, you know, the Europe in the beginning of the, you know, 1800s, basically, you see the industrialization in Europe. You see the, you know, the rapid transformation, technological changes. 1810, 1820s, 1830s, not in England, also Germany, France, you know, all over the Europe, basically. These changes transformed Europe, this industrialization. And you see, as a result of this, including in the United States, as a result of this economic changes, you see the educational system, you see the more women participation in the workforce, more women in the education, and then rapid transformation, migration from rural areas to cities. We see the increasing trend of the cities and urbanization in all over the Europe and in the United States. I believe the same thing's happening last 30, 40 years in the Muslim societies. Istanbul population in 1980s, early 1980s was 2, 3 million. Cairo population, 2, 3 million. Karachi population in Pakistan, 4, 5 million. But today, population is 15 million. 14 million. There are more technological changes, more universities. As a result of these economic changes, we see the new private universities all over the Turkey. Almost more than 100 private universities last 15 years was established in Turkey. In Qatar, for example, I believe Qatar is the one of the most important example. All of the, you know, American, most of the American universities, they have campuses in Qatar, like Carnegie Mellon, New York University, Georgetown University, VCU, Virginia Commonwealth University. I mean, these are the important changes. In Qatar universities, you see more women. Women, you know, and female students educating themselves. They are studying BA or master degrees. And almost 100, according to, you know, new number by the Saudi Arabian government, almost 106,000 students, they are receiving financial aid from Saudi Arabian government, and they are studying outside of the Saudi Arabia, either in the United States or in Europe, in Holland, in Turkey, in Australia. This will create changes. That's why I'm optimistic, basically.
Yeah, and
not the crazy revolutions, but education, urbanization, more women participation in the workforce, more women participation in the education. This will create more changes. This is the real secularism, actually. And I don't think anyone will be able to escape from these conditions.
Yeah, I mean, it's already left the train, right? These changes are going to happen
left.
No matter what. Let's go to Turkey again when we are talking about. So Turkey went through a very similar kind of thing as Egypt and Tunisia.
Yeah.
And, you know, how did and again, it's been used as like a potential model for Egypt and Tunisia. Tell us a little bit about the transition and who held power, how did the transition happen, that maybe Egypt and Tunisia can use as a model. What can they use?
Yeah, actually, you know, in 1980, you know, every 10 years or 15 years, the military came to power and overthrew the, you know, democratically elected president or prime minister in Turkey. And last coup was, you know, the real coup, military came to power in 1980. And put 100,000 people in a jail, executed almost, you know, 40, 50 people. And there was a military regime between 1983. After 1983, Turgut Özal, former employee of the World Bank, who came to power, democratically elected in Turkey, and he started new policies in Turkey, which is the neoliberalism, basically, which is the free market economy. This free market economy, especially he changed the privatization law in Turkey. He started the industrialization. There's a critical aspect of it. It created some inequality, according to some scholars. It created poverty. It created chaotic urbanization. But at the same time, it created and produced new class in Turkey. And this new class, the people who are more traditional, who have more traditional values, more conservative, more religiously conservative, but at the same time, they open the companies. They start to import and exporting with the United States, with Qatar, with China, with you know, the other former Soviet republics, especially after the collapse of the Soviet Union. You see the Uzbekistan, Kazakhstan, Central Asian countries. Most of the Turkish businessmen who have more traditional values visited, you know, Central Asia. Malaysia, Indonesia, they start making business and trade, basically. So this creates the changes in Turkish society. And
what
Islam,
what kind of changes did that create?
Changes, basically, you see the more religious revivalism in Turkey in general. More religious revivalism in the market economy. But what was happening, there was a religious revivalism just when the Development Party came to power. And we see the political arena seems to be Islamicized. Actually, it's not. Islamic parties or Islamists became secularized through the market.
Right.
Especially when we look at, you know, current Prime Minister of the Recep Tayyip Erdogan. He's different today than in 1990s. Mm. He's more democratic. He's more market-oriented. He's more secular. And he's praying less than the 1980s, 1990s, certainly. So from my perspective, I believe, you know, the same things happen in Egypt. Whether Muslim Brotherhood comes to power or not. Muslim Brotherhood can come to power, but Muslim Brotherhood has a very diverse views within. There are many different groups and perspective within the Muslim Brotherhood. I believe Muslim Brotherhood should come to power. That doesn't mean Egypt will be Islamicized, but Muslim Brotherhood will be changed.
I think you need to get those guys working and developing businesses, right? That's what you said.
Exactly. You know, the market is investigating everyone, basically. Now, this is not my perspective. This is the one of the most famous sociologists and political governors. Political scientist Ernest Gellner is saying this, actually. Market is a very powerful phenomena, secularizing the people, individualizing the people, basically, and domesticating the any other ideology or concept or religion, including the Islam, including Judaism, including the Christianity.
Yeah, I think it's fascinating. So if you were to, since you're a professor, we're all your students, tell us three things that you would like us to do or realize after the show that you're like, you know, we still haven't covered it during the show, or to emphasize something you said already. What are the three takeaways that you want to have us have after the show?
One of the most important that I would like to say, I think, you know, as a Muslim living in the United States, as an American Muslim, Turkish-American, one of the most disturbing thing for the Muslims in the United States, I believe, the recent trend of the Islamophobia in the United States. This is, I believe, it's very important. It's very important to understand Islamophobia in the United States is disturbing Muslim population in the United States. We have a 6, 7, or 8 million Muslims in the United States. I think it's very important to understand the Muslim contribution to the United States and the United States economy. This is creating the fear among the Muslims in the United States. Whether Muslims living in San Diego, whether Muslims living in Texas or Tennessee, or in Seattle or in Portland, I mean, we are part of this fabric. We are part of this society.
How would you describe the Islamophobia? Are you saying that the Americans are afraid of Islam? And how would you describe that fear from your perspective?
I mean, for example, the recent case of, you know, like Sharia banning. You know, they are banning the Sharias in different states, like in Oklahoma, I think in Arkansas, I think in Montana and other places. I mean, do you think Sharia will come to Oklahoma?
I'm not sure. What is Sharia?
Islamic religious law, it will come to Oklahoma or Arkansas or Montana?
No.
It's impossible.
So
how many Muslims living in Oklahoma? 500?
Right.
Or 300? But this is creating the fear among the Muslims.
Tell us about the law, though.
And whenever we have
the
news here and this kind of news, negative news on Islam and Muslims, in Muslim societies, this is a big news. This is a big news. This creating the, you know, this connection between Muslims and Americans and the United States and Muslim world. I think this is very important that, you know, we need to understand, we need to recognize the Muslims' contribution to the civilization. We need to understand the Muslim contribution, Muslim-American contribution to the United States and Western civilization as well. I think this is one of the most important things. And the second one is we need to understand not every Muslim is the same. We have 1.5 billion people or 1.4 billion people. Everyone has a different view, like in the United States. Everyone has a different view on Christianity or Judaism or Islam. It's same thing over there.
We have 30 more seconds to wrap up. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I want to hear the third, so tell me quickly.
But I would like to, the Americans visit Muslim societies. This is the most important thing. They should visit the Muslim societies. They should visit Turkey. They should visit Egypt. They should try to understand the cultural sensitivities of Muslims. I think it's very important.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, thank you so much for sharing and I'm sorry that we have to close. I thought that this was a fascinating show. Thank you so much for your time
thank
and sharing
you
what you, your current knowledge already. You're a great professor. And thanks to Chris at WBLQ. Next Thursday on Fire It Up with CJ on March Madness, we'll listen to Ragini Michaels talk about anger management. Have a great week and we'll see you next Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time and 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time.
You've been listening to Fire It Up with CJ. Tune in each week on Transformation Talk Radio at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern Time for more of Fire It Up with CJ. It takes just one spark to ignite a fire. For dates and showtimes, visit www.fireitupwithcj.com or www.transformationtalkradio.com.